Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hi, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Mitchin. My name is Andrew Levins. My co-host, as always, Mitchell Orr.
What's up?
And joining us today, again, for the first time in, I don't know,
three weeks,
the one and only Michael Eggert, newly unemployed for a short amount of time.
Yes, retired.
retired for a fortnight.
Retired from poverty.
Pinbone.
You mean freshly sold out,
Mike Eggert. If only. Did all the selling out without any of the selling.
So he's been a good luck Pinbone since, was it September last
October.
Year? October last year. A spot in Kensington that he was running with his Pinbone crew, Bez and Jim. You guys previously in Paddington, I guess, and then 10 William. So you've done, you know, like kind of like Sydney's best brunch menu, worked at Sydney's, you know, one of Sydney's best Italian joints, and then you tried your hand at like Chinese and had only woks in the back of Good Luck Pinbone in Kensington. That was always going to be a pop-up.
Mm-hmm.
And you finally, you wrapped it up.
Yeah, we closed it down last week, which is good. So
you put a pin in the pop-up. You popped the pop-up.
That's it, Levs.
Should I keep going?
No. Well, you have to. That's what the strength of this podcast is built on, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Your whimsical play on words.
So how does it feel, you know, knocking another project on the head?
Oh, it's good. Someone asked me that actually in a press interview 2 days ago. I can't remember who it was. And they said like, oh, are you sad? Are you disappointed you're closing? And I was like, no. Because when you open something and you know you're closing it, you sort of like, you squeeze every drop out of it. So we did everything we thought we could, or everything we were able to do in the time frame we had, and we set ourselves like bold targets, and we pushed ourselves pretty hard. So no sadness at all. In fact, we ran for like 3 months longer than we intended to. Mm-hmm. So it was good, really good. So really happy to be out of there. So yeah.
What was the dish you had the most of left over on your final day? Or like even, not even the dish, like the element, the thing that you're like, oh God.
Oh look, we ran pretty tight. I think on the last day, actually we had like a half a box of yabbies left over, but we intended to have some extra because we were having a cook up for friends.
Yep.
But we had a bit more than we thought. But last night we made like Mexican at our house and just had like yabby boil. Yeah. So fucking indulgent, eh? I was actually going to tweet it and like hashtag gains and pretend I was hongy, you know, because kind of all fitted with the new signing and all that sort of stuff. I thought, you know. But yeah, we sat there eating just giant yabby tail tacos. It was very,
unreal.
Yeah, it was really good.
You gonna do that at your next spot?
No.
Yabby tail tacos, no, $40 a taco.
Yeah, no, I'm not quite up to that margins yet.
I know, Maryvale prices, you might be.
So the big news that came out at the start of this week was that you have announced a new temporary venture.
Yeah.
You are working with Maryvale,
mm-hmm.
Which is a company that should not listen to all the episodes you've been on of this podcast. tell me what you guys are doing with Maryvale.
So it's a weird one. It's a pretty interesting project. And to be honest, they came and approached us, and we said like no, and they kind of hit us up through Geordie. He was like, do you want to have a meeting? And I was like, no, not really. Mm-hmm. And then he told me the basis for the project, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So the reason we kind of got enticed was because when they said, oh, this is the project, it is a genuine pop-up. So we're building a makeshift kitchen on wheels in a shed at the back of a car park behind a pub. And from that, they kind of let it up to us. They kind of said, this is what we think, but what would you do? And we were like, oh, yeah, maybe. Still don't really want to you know, we want to be independent, like we've always wanted to be independent. So they said to us, well, how about you don't sign with Merivale, you just invoice us and we'll do a deal where you guys stay as Pinbone and you just work in our space. And we were like, well, that's heaps better for us. So we're staying as Pinbone and we're basically coming on as a supplier. So we're just like a fish supplier or a meat supplier, but we're going to do the restaurant. So we can do all the hiring, we can do all the firing. And they've been really fantastic. They've been really awesome. So they're setting it up. And the long-term goal for them is to use that space continually for different things. So say like Hongi decides he wants to do, you know, like Peruvian food.
Yabby tacos.
Yeah, he might go there and do a pop-up. Or if they get Greeno and he's like, I want to try my hand at doing something else. Or they recruit someone new or they want to give a young guy an opportunity. The whole idea is that that space, once we do the groundwork with them, and do the kind of hard yards. The first 6 months of a space is the shit times. The first couple of weeks are the shit times. And you really, you don't know what's going to hit you until you've opened, you know? Yeah. So the idea is use us up a little bit like frontline infantry. Like get in there, we'll take all the hits. And then once we get out of there, there'll be a running, smooth, you know, operational, creative space that they can do. So Justin and Frank, who are the visionaries and the money men and the businessmen behind the Merivale Enterprises, said to us, what would you do? We put together some ideas and they were like, this is fucking cool. And we basically said to them, we want to do like a warehouse party. We just want to keep it really, really minimal, like really fucking minimal and really fun, and kind of do some things that we would never be able to do ourselves, as well as do some things that no one's ever done before. So Justin was really keen to keep it as a bottle shop. We thought that was a really good idea. So it's basically going to look and trade like a bottle shop. So people will come in, they'll walk into the giant bottle shop fridge and they'll get their own booze.
And where is this again?
It's in the Tennyson Hotel down in Mascot, but it's not in the hotel. It's in the car park of the hotel. So it's all very interesting. It's all very weird. And then internally, we're going to have like wood fire ovens and wood fire grills, and we're going to do like real dirty, fast-paced Italian food. So
something that you kind of cooked for the first time proper at 10 William?
Yeah, I mean, and that was a bit more refined. And you were allowed to do like Asian twists and do whatever you wanted, and it was a bit more loose Italian. And this one's going to be kind of like Brooklyn style, you know, no genre, no province. You know, we're not sitting there saying we're doing Tuscan, we're not doing, you know, like, you know, Sardinian. We're just going to grab at like real basic kind of things and just have fun. And we're going to do big numbers. So, you know, like it's a 90-seater, which we could easily turn three times. And we're doing lunch, dinner, Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, the prospect of doing 450 covers a day is right there. So it's going to be that kind of vibe. So we make breads, but big trays of focaccia, you know, or big flatbreads. And then we'll use them in different elements. And then, yeah, we'll just sling. It'll just be fast.
Maybe making less pasta.
Probably not by hand. To be honest, we'll probably roll sheets and do like old school raviolis and stuff like that. Or agnolotti's, like that you can get done quickly, but we're not going to sit there and roll, you know, gnocchettis and, you know, trofetti and all that other sort of stuff by hand, not for that many numbers. There might be one or two on, but you know, we might have an extruder. I'm not sure how to spend other people's money yet. I'm still learning. And Hongi and Patrick Friesen and Geordie have come running. They love a new venture. They're like, if you need help spending, Patrick Friesen loves spending money. Hey? Like, came to the restaurant. He was like, I know how to go through Chef's Warehouse and just buy everything. He's like, when it comes time to setting up the kit, just bring me with you. I'll teach you. Like, when you think you need 10 things, we'll get 40. Like, he's like, you should see the places they don't know I've got at Queen Chow, just hiding all this fucking Tupperware. I was like, Jesus. So, well, it's been quite amazing because they have like a covenant, like an arc of old equipment that they've pulled out of other places. So, like, when they set up Newport, they had, like, they did the refurb on the Newport and they just totally under budgeted how busy it was going to be. So like the equipment they put in was drastically undersized. They pulled it straight back out. So they're kind of just like, what do you want? And I'm like, got pizza oven. They're like, yeah, got four. Which one? want this. So it was really good because it is a genuine pop-up. We haven't bought anything. So they basically come to the party with all this old equipment and they're just putting it in places. And then if there's something we wanted, like I think we needed one thing, they traded it out from Felix, got them a new one because they're pumping, and put the old secondhand thing. So it's really kind of a good fit for us. And yeah, it's gonna be fun.
How long is the pop-up going to last?
6 months only.
So is that long enough for the three of you to be forced to wear something ridiculous for the March into Merivale calendar?
Well, I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure. I would, absolutely. You know?
When does it start?
In October, but I don't know. We haven't broken ground or done any building, I don't know. I don't know how to build restaurants. Yeah. Like, when we do something, it's like Jem, me and Barry, and we get the keys. We go in, we rip whatever we can rip out, and then we paint what we can, lay carpet, and then we open. So it's like a week, you know, because we don't have money. We don't have any skills. We're not carpenters. We're not electricians. We get Jem's brother, the plumber. We get my friend that does wiring, and we get it done in a couple of weeks. And we don't want to spend money on fit outs. But this one's like, they're going to do a fit out. Like, the whole place is going to be converted. But when they say to me 4 weeks, I think, well, they've opened 68 restaurants, so they probably have a good idea of, you know, and they've renovated them all three times. They probably know what they're talking about. So early October is the goal. But, you know, they're quite comfortable with just doing things at their own pace, and, you know, we're not in any rush. So we'll see what happens.
October, November.
Yeah, it's March. Sorry, March is in there. March, just in there. Just. Yeah. What kind of outfit would you wear in a March?
I think I could be village people. I'd like to be the Indian. Okay. You know, if it's not culturally appropriate, inappropriate
anymore.
Definitely
is, but okay. Is it definitely.
But am I culturally appropriating Native American Indians or a guy from village people?
Because you're culturally appropriating YMCA. Yeah. Not YMCA, sorry, village people. One thing that it's exciting about this prospect for me is that Good Luck Pinbone was BYO,
mm-hmm.
Which was great in its own way. Yep. But one thing that I like about you is your wine taste,
mm-hmm.
and the idea of you essentially being the first venue, Merivale venue, to have an incredible wine list.
Yeah.
Well, very modern. Look, they definitely have good wine lists at Merivale, but it's a different kind of wine to what I'm into. Yeah. The idea of having like a natural focused Merivale venue is very exciting to me.
So straight up, we dismissed the idea of pushing for a natural wine list because we were just like, pick your battles. So that was things we wanted to do. And then Justin came to us and said, what do you want to drink? And we were like, oh, look, let's just do let's do the business thing. Like, you guys import wines and you have contracts and you have all these things. Like, there's 68 restaurants or something ridiculous, so they have a very solid foundation, so we didn't want to rock the boat. And they were like, nah, this is a bottle shop, like, you can have whatever you want. So they're like, it doesn't have to be the whole focus, but we can easily accommodate what you want. So we're working with Frank Moreau, who's the sommelier for the group, great sommelier, and he's just like, just tell me what you want and we'll work it out. And the advantage of this is we're not strictly going to have a wine list.
Mm.
Because we don't need to print a list. Mm. So when Mitch opens Acme on a Saturday night, if he prints a list, you kind of have to have a certain amount of stock because you don't want to be that.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But
if your front of house is doing their job, you should have a certain amount of things because you don't, it's like kitchens. You don't want to run out of stuff at 6:30 on a Saturday and have to tell every table that comes in after. So same with wine. You don't want to be saying, oh, sorry, the Lusimago is gone, or this is gone.
We're out of food.
Exactly, right? But when you walk into a room and things are on a shelf, if I have one bottle of Radicon and nobody drinks it for 6 months, they'll just absorb that back into Fred's. Or, you know, like, we don't need to have two cases, three cases. We can have two bottles of something sitting on a shelf. So, I mean, effectively, I could put a 50-bottle natural wine list together, but I could have two bottles of everything. 100 bottles of wine, that's nothing. You know what I mean? It's like eight cases. So it's a grand scheme of things. If people want to drink the, you know, Pegasus Bay Riesling, or they want to drink something from New Zealand, you know, or some cloudy crap thing, or people can do whatever they want. The idea is that we want them to come in and pick stuff, and then the pricing is going to be really cheap. Like, the pricing is going to be not quite bottle shop, but definitely not restaurant. We want it to be a really open, fun, you know, cheap experience. So it should be really fun.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Sounds like the perfect venture for you guys to do in between your next thing.
Yeah, exactly. And we're not really sure what we're going to do after this, whether we'll stay together anyway as a group, or, you know, like, we've been going now for 5 years. So the end of this will be nearly 6 years, whether or not, like, you know, Bez wants to travel, or she's been doing her jewelry again, and her jewelry's fucking unreal. So, you know, she can't keep up with demand. So she might stop and just follow that dream now, or I don't know. This, you know, I want to be a farmer, so, you know, I'm pretty much ready to retire from cooking.
And this is the jacket you came wearing today, definitely.
Well, this is my Merivale, you know, suit. I try to look like I'm part of a company. I got to go to the gym now. I got to take selfies. Got to write hashtag gains. I got to
do stuff. You got to do runs with Hongi and get on his Instagram.
That's it.
So I want to talk to you about pop ups.
Yep, please do.
Because Good Luck Pinbone was a pop up, and your next venture with Merivale is one too. And are you allowed to talk about the difficulties that you had as like one of Sydney's more prominent chefs running a pop up that some of Australia's bigger restaurant critics didn't want to give the time of day to, because by definition it was a pop up.
Yeah, look, I probably shouldn't.
We don't need to single anyone out. Yeah, but like,
there's a really disappointing. Not all of them. Some of them are really fucking great. Like Pat's super supportive and Anthony Hockstep's super supportive.
By listing all the good ones, you're actually making it easier for people to work out who the ones you're not talking about.
What's that whole thing? If you don't say the name, I didn't say that. I don't know. Look, I'm not saying who's bad. I'm just saying who's good. And I don't want to paint everyone with the same brushstroke. Okay. I want to be fair because some people get it. So if you're going to slander reviewers, which I'm happy to do, there's a lot of douchebags out there that don't know their ass from their head and they write things they shouldn't write. But there is a lot of, and it is a real shame, there's a lot of people that disrespect a pop-up. There's a lot of shit pop-ups, but there's a lot of shit restaurants. There's a lot of pop-ups that are only there for 6 months. There's a lot of restaurants that say they're going to be there for 10 years and are only there for 6 months. People that open and say, we're going to be a restaurant, get reviewed, get treated as an equal, get into guides, get into, books, all that sort of stuff. People that open as a pop-up don't even get a look in. And it's a real shit thing because it's one of the best parts of modern dining is the pop-up when it's done well. Whether it's like a one-off thing, like you can't tell me that what Parsi and Giorgio
I was going to bring that up straight away.
Are doing isn't the coolest thing around. Who cares if it's for 3 days? If it made every other bar look shit for 3 nights, then shame on the rest of the bars because they've got a ground, they've got a foot in the ground where they could be doing something really good. Yes, Giorgio breaks the law and he just does whatever he wants and he just is a funny, funny Italian and he gets away with things that would never work long term. And you have to then look at that and go, that's why the rest of the bars aren't as cool. But in the context of life, if you don't write about that and you don't take advantage of that, so we got dismissed as a pop-up and people were like, I don't see the point of pop-ups. Those same people flocked down to Renee's pop-up when No More was here. And wrote about it as it was revolutionizing Australia. And I'm not saying we're as good as Noma, but don't tell me that pop-ups are pointless when you flock to other ones, So to me, it's disrespectful, and there's a real misconception that pop-ups are, inferior. And in many ways, they're, a lot harder. They're super hard. They're expensive. It costs you a fucking shitload of energy. Like to stop and start. Like when we were doing original Pinbone, which was only ever going to be 12 months and we ran for 2 years, we had a brunch menu on, we had a dinner menu on, we had like multiple facets to just constantly write different sorts of things. Then we did Te Muim, I think we did like 82 like menu items in 4 months, right? And at Good Luck Pinbone, we've just cracked about 94 or something. Like we keep counting, just see where we're at to. And now we're going to do this other pop-up at the Tennyson and we've already got about 35 menu items that we want to rotate through. So, in 3 years, you've come up with, 250 different menu items, some of them good, some of them bad, but the evolution and the creativity and the challenge to change genres is really tough, And every time we get like disrespected or overlooked, it kind of gets a bit like, fuck you,
I feel you on that, but I think to say it's harder than owning a restaurant is, it's not, I don't think it's harder. I think it's very different. You don't have a lot of the same pressures and that kind of thing, such as a fucking rental bond, big rents. And like, there's a lot of different challenges.
Yeah, there
and
is.
To say that, you should be able to be creative. Like we've never repeated a dish at Acme, for example, Like your creativity shouldn't just be because you're in a pop-up.
No. It's not about that. It's not saying it's harder, but if you think that like there's not places that rest on their laurels, and they open and once they open, that's it. They're done. They sit back and it's 5 years later, but constantly reinvigorating, constantly getting rid of good staff because, Mitch just got Danny Boy, our kitchen hand, who's probably one of the best kitchen hands I've ever worked with.
So he ended up acting. I was wondering because you just lost Lil.
Yeah. No, but Danny, we have Danny, but
yeah.
And Danny came from Mike.
Yeah, like, no, I knew that. Yeah, I was like,
you would never have let him go if you had a, you know. I mean, so we had to get another one, retrain him, and it's like the kind of thing you want to, have as a security blanket, these staff. You know what I mean? You train up waiters, you let them go, you move on. That's the tough part. You know what I mean? Like, and there's rental prep like bonds, but they come and they go, so it's like a bit easier. You know what I mean? But it's just, it's very disrespectful to think that they're a lesser entity than a permanent restaurant.
They should still be treated as a restaurant. Yeah. From a reviewer's eyes, they should still be treated as a restaurant, as a dining experience that adds to the culture of the city.
Yeah, not necessarily as a restaurant, but definitely as a dining experience that adds to the excitement of the city that you're writing about.
It doesn't matter if it's there for 6 months or 2 weeks or whatever. It's still a fucking restaurant.
Exactly. And
it's still got to run.
It comes down to reputation. Like, Parsi came out and said that Cafe Parsi was a pop-up, and every single place went and reviewed him. He won Chef of the Year. He got all the guides. So it's just about their own perception. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't really give a fuck. Like, we're not disappointed. We get heaps of media. We get lots of attention. We're doing really well. But we've had a couple of guys come to us recently and girls that have said, oh, look, we've done the training and we're looking to do our own thing. And what would you advise? And I want to say to them, go and do pop-ups. Like, go and find yourself a space. But at the same time, you kind of think, well, we got really lucky that people took any notice of us at the first one. But I don't know how many people come and go and, you know, don't get that recognition. I just think it's shit.
Still, to do a pop-up, you have to build a reputation.
But definitely.
To own it, to run a successful restaurant these days, you have to build a reputation too. You can't just come in and, I'm going to open a restaurant, I hope to be successful.
It's one of those like chicken and the egg things. Like, you can't get reputation until you run a successful business. You can't run a successful business until you get reputation.
Well,
you
have to build reputation in the industry first.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to get
and
lucky.
And then that comes.
Yeah. Like, you got lucky. We got lucky. Like, of the same people that come through, like, there's
many
people.
You make your own luck too. If you're not working your ass off,
not
then you're
not
going to get lucky.
That, but there's heaps of guys that are working their ass off. And then there's 12 people that get mentioned all the time. There's so many guys that we know that are really good chefs and they're never in the limelight. Mm-hmm. Like, it took LPs 2 years to start getting any recognition from the media and doing anything. And it's helping the business. But, like, they've been better than us for 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, every time you look at their food, you just go, fuck, it's so good. You know what I mean? Like, but there's so many people like that. You know, like, you're happy for everyone that gets the success, but you're also saddened by the people that miss the boat. You know, and there's no cut and dry rule. Like, some people's food that is as good as everyone else's, and they get ghost town, and the places just go.
Yeah.
Then there's other places that are fucking shit. Yeah,
they've been around for fucking 15
and
years.
Just like, what the fuck?
So, after, you know, you mentioned that there are people that come to you and ask for advice about starting a new venture, let's talk about starting a pop-up. What are some things that people should and shouldn't do?
So, I think the advantages of pop-ups, for instance, like, so one of the things Mitchy brought up then was like the rental bond. So, for instance, one of the things I've come to terms with now is that I will never invest money in a site that I don't own. I will not do it. Like, longer that we've done pop-ups and the more I've seen friends, you know, and like, I'm sure Mitchy can talk to this point better than me, but when you put money into places, it puts you under so much pressure. You know, like, we managed to open the last Pinbone for $30,000, and had the building not being demolished, we could have stayed there if we wanted to. We could have put a DA in to get an alcohol license, and we could have made it a really profitable little business and put some more money into it, and probably for about 50 grand we could have run that for 2-3 years. But I don't reckon I would go over 100k. So if you're going to do something permanent or temporary, I think the money you put into it, like, and this comes to what me and Mitch were talking about before we opened, is sometimes people's reviews are focused too heavily on design and features. But I think it's one of the biggest errors personally you can make, to put yourself under pressure to put that investment into a site. It doesn't mean it's easy to do it without it, because there's so many sites that need.
Man, it's really hard to build a kitchen for 100K.
I know, but you got to wait and find one. He's asking me for advice on pop-ups.
Yep.
But if you spend $250,000 on a kitchen,
this is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if you're gonna open a restaurant, like, if you're gonna open a pop-up, what Mike does is goes and finds a place that has things in it, and they might be fucking really shit things, but they work.
Yeah. Because the most expensive
parts, run off 2 woks.
Yeah, yeah.
The most expensive parts of kitchens aren't the equipment in it. It's your grease trap. It's your exhaust fans.
Well, they're the bulk, yeah, and you should be getting your landlords to put there into them.
Landlord
as well.
Should pay for that stuff.
Should.
If it's a part of the building and it stays there and you can't take it with you when you go,
yeah, but I mean,
the landlord should pay for
it. Open a pop-up. Don't do a pop-up in an art gallery, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Because unfortunately, I mean, you should be able to do those because in other countries, the best pop-ups are the ones that are in weird spaces. But our legislation and our councils are stupid. Like, some of the best restaurants in the world at the moment are basically people on rooftops with a Weber.
Yeah, we did an entire episode earlier this week about Cambodia, and that's all outside.
But even minimal in New York at the moment, there's a place called, I think it's Achilles Heel, and the guy's basically built himself a little barbecue on a roof, and he does chickens just hanging over the fire, and then just grilled vegetable sides, and the place is sick. But you would get killed in Australia if you tried to do that. But it's sick. So Mitchie's point's true: you can't invest in a long term thing, but at the same time, even if you try to, you shouldn't be building hoods, grease trap, you shouldn't be paying for that stuff. You know, toilet facilities, try to put the landlord on for that. Because anything is upgrading the site.
Anything that stays in the site and adds value to the site, the landlord should be paying for.
But then the second tier to that is everything you do to a site, so building a kitchen pass or whatever, that kind of, they won't pay for. You can't get around that. You need stainless, you need all this sort of stuff, so it's expensive. But then everything you put in, so you might go and buy yourself $250 tables, but when you go to sell them, they're worth $25. Like, I don't care where you work, what you do. No, you get no return. Everything diminishes by about 75%, literally the first day you turn the key. So if you spend $500,000 on a fit out and $150,000 of that's kitchen, you've got $350,000 on the front, you've got to pay that back. So it's money that you've got to find every week to pay that back before you make profit. You know what I mean? So it's very tough. And the problem is reviewers get really focused on what things look like. And that's a shame because really should be what they're eating. And should be about the young generation moving forward, because we can't compete with guys that have got investors. You know, like, you can't compete with the old school brigade like the Matt Morans and the Luke Mangans, who have built up a career collecting people that have money and now they've got power, and so they can open a place that, you know, might not be as good as the new young, you know, exciting chef, but they look real pretty.
And that's so young reviewers like myself, whenever I submit stuff to the guides that I write for, I never ever mention what a fit out looks like because my brain doesn't work like that. And I always get the review sent back to me saying, you didn't mention the fit out, the design of the venue. You need to add a few sentences about that. And it's always like, it looks nice. Like,
it's not that it shouldn't matter, because it can add to the overall experience, but a cheap fit out can add as much to the experience as a fucking $4 million fit out.
Exactly.
Either way, if it's done right or wrong.
You should always talk about it in a positive light, but if you think it's a negative, I don't think it should come into it. Like, if you want to say that the fit out they laid down was great and added to the experience, that's fantastic, but as long as the food's good to match and you judge the food equally. But if the fit out's bare bones and minimal because they didn't want to drop $250,000 on whatever,
you shouldn't be punished.
That's the thing. But unfortunately, it is a lot of the time. So for a pop-up, find a site that's existing. And the beautiful part about Sydney is people close every 6 months. So there are lots of sites. You know what I mean? Take a gamble. Push for short-term leases. Push for low, rental bonds.
Low overheads.
Keep your overheads down. You know what I mean? And be realistic. Don't expect to make money. Do it for fun. Do it for creativity. Do it for your reputation. You know, one of the things I got taught from a guy called Jason Jones, who used to run Mamacita, and he now runs a chain of like Mexican style places through Southeast Asia, is invest in yourself to the point where you feel like it's education. So if you want to go to university, you might spend $100,000 on tuition. If you want to drop $100,000 on a pop-up, but you're going to think you get 18 months out of it, you will learn $100,000 worth of education in that site. You'll learn about all the things that you never realized were going on when you were working 75 hours in the kitchen. So as long as you're prepared to lose the money, it's safe, but get a lot out of it. Do everything, because that's how you become a really good restaurateur. Like, there's so many things that you'll never know until you've done your own space. And we've worked now across like 4 different companies, and this is moving into another company now, and I can't wait to learn how Merivale runs things, because it's all about upskilling and educating yourself. And eventually we'll lay ground and we'll stay somewhere permanently, maybe. Or I will, or Jem will, or Barry will. We might even be independents. But what we've picked up and what we've taught ourselves over the years, like, will be invaluable. And that's the thing. Like, we spent $30,000 on this one, and I got at least double that in just education. Just learning different things, totally separate nuances to what we used to learn. One of the toughest things was running as a BYO restaurant, but we managed to do it. I think we settled the books up yesterday, so everyone's paid, all staff, all suppliers, and we had money in the bank. So, that's a really small win, and it's not a smart win, but now we know how to run a business without selling booze in Sydney, in a shit area, on a train track, you know what I mean? In a dive of a building with very minimal overheads and make profit. So, to me, that was a win. And also, it's if I just threw a bar on next door, it becomes a really profitable business. And so, then you kind of back yourself. I think the biggest question about when to invest and when to set, when to open, chefs are always like, when am I ready?
It's, you're never ready.
If you can get yourself to a point where you feel like you have a model that won't send you bankrupt in the first 12 months, you'll be okay. Because the 12 months is the hard part, yeah? And then you've got to go again. You know what I mean? Like, you got to keep going.
Every 12 months is the hard part, right? Yeah. And that's the thing with a pop-up too. You can do something and know that you have X amount of time. So you sort of know that you have a captive audience for X amount of time too. But if Pinbone was still opening that site in 3 years, like, we can't say that it would be as busy as it was in that first 6 months, you know? Like,
you've got to keep it relative. So if you're going to open for a long term, you've got to be as busy as you can and get your payments down, because the second years get less and less unless you are like an Estar or, you know what I mean? Those kind of places that keep evolving and keep getting busier. Like, Esther seems to be busier now than it was when it first opened, and that's through hard work and dedication and execution. And, you know, the hardest part about a pop-up is you throw away your reputation at each site and you've got to start again. So, you know, we were really highly regarded for doing brunch, and we threw that in the bin and got recognition for doing Italian, and we threw that in the bin, got recognition for doing Chinese. And so, you know, Mitchie's now got a reputation as like the pasta, you know, restaurant of Sydney.
Yeah, and everyone stop fucking putting pasta on your menus in non-Italian restaurants and shit. Fucking hell.
So, you know, there's pros and cons for both. You know what I mean? Like, effectively, Mitchie's been running now for X amount of years, and you'd hope that he's paid off his...
3 years in October.
See, there you go. He survived 2 years is pretty hard to get out of Sydney. Anytime you get over 3 years...
The dip lasted 3 years and 2 months.
Yeah. So, that's fucking impressive. So, you've got to hope that you get your spend down. You know, your investment at the start's gone, because you won't be as busy as you was for the first 12 months.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, you know, but he's also now got a big footprint. So he's mature, it's Acme, and it's synonymous with Sydney dining. Whereas when he opened, it was like, who and where and what? So it's all swings and roundabouts. Because now when you say Mitch's name, everyone goes, oh, that fuckwit. But they know that it's Acme. Whereas it used to just be the fuckwit. You know what I mean?
So what about from a menu point of view? Because when I think of a pop-up, I generally think of a smaller menu. That's not what you did at Good Luck Pinbone at all. It was like definitely lending to the fact that you guys ran a straight-up restaurant just for a shorter amount of time than your average restaurant runs for. Do you, like, you know, if you were starting out doing your own pop-up, would you recommend doing a menu as big as that or keeping things simple and smaller?
Menus are one of those things, and I think Mitch, I'd like to hear Mitchy's point of view on this, but menus for me are one of those things that evolve as you get smarter as a chef. And there's two ways to write a menu. There's a menu that you write as a chef where it's kind of about you and your food and the dishes that you're doing. And then there's the menus to write as a restaurateur where you look at the parts of the menu where you think, okay, I can get people to have this, and then I can get them to have this, and then I'll get them to have this.
I can reuse that element in this one.
Well, no, not so much that, but you kind of, you know what you need to get out of a customer.
Right.
So we knew we needed to get $50 out of a person. So if I wrote a short menu where it was like a chicken and a rice and a greens, that'd be enough for two people, but that would only be about $60. So we would have got a $30 a head spend. So you got to manipulate your menu and you write it more as a restaurateur as opposed to a chef. So for instance, like if I was going to be super chefy and like avant-garde and like mad, my favorite way to write a menu would be literally like maybe 12 things max, so that a table of four could order like one of everything, and then a table of two could order maybe half the menu, and it'd be really cool, and they'd have to come back and try it again, and everything would be priced appropriately, so it kind of got to that $50 head mark if that's what I needed. Depends on the site, depends on overheads. But realistically, when you do that, then you get the gluten-free person, then you get the nut-free person, then you get the vegetarians, then you get the vegans. So it's all about personal choice. For us, we run 90% gluten-free just by default because we were doing like Chinese. 95.
How are you going to do that with a pizza shop?
We got some tricks. 95% dairy-free for this one was quite easy. But even when we were at 10 million, we had 50% of the menu that was dairy-free, and then 25% of the menus that were, you could easily leave the dairy out.
Yeah.
So once you tick those boxes, and then you go, okay, well, I know we get a lot of vegetarians and vegans, and I don't want to have the hassle during the night. So there's three dishes on the menu that are vegan. So that covers my vegetarians and my vegans. But then there's also three dishes that I can quickly
make vegetarian,
drop something out. So there's six dishes. So even if a table of four walk in that's a vegan, I can cover them, and vegan and vegetarian all covered. So that's ticked that off. But then all of a sudden you've already started with six dishes, you know what I mean, before you even write your menu, unless you want to just do a vegan restaurant. So as a restaurateur, you become smarter. As a chef, you're always a bit more like arrogant. But once your business is successful and you're making money, you quickly realize that that's the smarter play. And also you get into Saturday night and the waiters come in and they go, okay, I got a vegan, a veggie, a dairy-free, a gluten-free, and you're like, yep.
Yeah, it's fine.
Because don't have to be a stress, you know what I mean? And back in the old days when we first opened, we didn't have that nuance. We didn't have the smarts. And maybe we should have, but that's a thing. You know, you don't have them.
Writing a menu is... the food part of writing a menu is easy. Like when we open Acme, the food is the last thing I thought about.
Yeah.
Because I know I can cook and I sort of knew what I was going to do, and that would come out in the wash. But writing a menu is more than just about the food, because it's what makes the business money to pay all the bills. It's what attracts customers, and it's sort of what, it's the voice of your restaurant, right? So you have to, it's easy to be creative when you have boundaries. It's easy for Mike to be creative in Pinbone because he knows I've got two woks to work with and I've got a charcoal grill. So that defines where his creativeness goes, right? At Acme, the menu has a structure, the same as Mike was talking about. There's the Jats, which are always on, and that rotates, so that's fine. I know, okay, I can be creative in that little box, and it's got to go on a Jats. And then there's a bologna sandwich, which stays on, and then the linguine stays on, the macaroni stays on. So everything else around that changes. And that, because we've been there for 3 years and we're not a pop-up, those three or four things that people recognize and know gives everyone a point of familiarity when they come into the restaurant, and gives the menu some grounding. And they're signature dishes, so to speak, but we don't have to call them that. And then outside of that, I can be as creative as I want, and things can change as often as I want, because that needs to happen as well to please repeat customers who come in all the time and then don't want to eat the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And it attracts new customers because they see you're constantly evolving and constantly working. So the menu has a structure of those things, X amount of vegetarian things, a cheese thing, the stracciatella, a seafood, a meat on the snacks. and then the pastas have the same breakdown. There's now four vegetarian pastas, all of which except one can be completely vegan or adjusted for whatever dietary necessary. Then there's two seafood pastas and then the pig's head at the moment. So it's the same thing. I give myself a structure to work in, to be creative in. So I know, okay, this vegetable's come out of season. I need to change a vegetable pasta. And that gives me a box to be creative in, rather than going, if you tell us, you can do whatever the fuck you want with whatever equipment. I don't know where to start, you know? So there's that part of it. But then there's also, okay, we need to balance this out so my food cost hits X amount. So I can, as Mikey said, I can afford to pay all those overheads. You might not be able to go to cost every dish to hit that exact mark. So you've got to be able to create balance across your menu where you might make one thing might cost you 60% food cost to put on the plate, but then you can balance that out with something else that costs 5% to put on the plate. You know what I mean? So, and you don't learn any of this when you're an apprentice or a chef being taught how to cook someone else's food, you know?
You just need to do it, but you need to do it smart. So don't overcapitalize yourself if you're doing your first one, because you'll find things that just fuck you. You know what I mean? And to the food costing thing, like one of the things that I've always drawn back to is the Mission Street Chinese food book, and it's so clever. Like, and he talks about not hitting your margins on everything. Talks about fried rice. I can't remember the exact example. It's pigeon and fried rice, or pigeon and something else. Pigeon costs him $12, but he sells it for $22. Which is fucked food cost. It's 50%. Yeah. But then he has fried rice that costs $2, but he sells it for 12. Yeah. So it makes the same profit. So he's like, at the end of the day, you got to look at it in two avenues. You have to hit higher percentages on some, but $10 is $10. So if you sell 100 pigeons and you sell 100 fried rice, you get the exact same money. Some are lower in labor, some are higher in turnaround. Like, we were selling yabbies that cost us $18 for $34. So terrible food cost, but they come in, they go out, keeps people happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're on another restaurant, you're probably selling it for $48. But, you know, we make other margins. You know, there's other things on the dish, like eggplant, you know, omelets. Mm-hmm. People are happy to pay $20. They're delicious. It probably cost me about $2. So you get, you know, much more profit on those.
Balance.
Okay, so to recap, keep your overheads low.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of losing money on this venture.
Yeah,
that you could be, used as education.
Don't get into hospitality if you expect to not lose
totally.
Money.
It's not losing money. It's don't be disappointed if you don't get the money back, but look at it as a way. You're spending the money on something other than making profit.
Money.
You're educating yourself.
Yeah.
structure your menu cleverly.
You won't be able to do that, but try. But you'll learn for the next one.
Don't just put on a bunch of crazy dishes that you really want to show off you can cook. Be more smart about the way you structure it.
And maybe have an Instagrammable dish or two as well. Unfortunately, in this modern world, that really pays dividends. So there's guys that write whole menus based on that, and they're fucking shit.
Yeah.
But it would be remiss not to tell people to try it, because some of those things really help, don't they?
So that's a very good backbone of ideas. I want one last helpful hint from you, and that is, how do you get people to your pop-up? How do you get it to stand out from all the other restaurants in Sydney?
Oh, that just comes down to you. If you're good, they'll come. If you're not, then they won't. And you'll know. So don't overcapitalize yourself. People will respect quality. At the end of the day, if you stick to your guns, you work really hard, people will turn up.
But do people just find out about you because you're good, or do you need to reach out to begin with?
Look, if you're good, the industry will know and the industry will support, and then people will come from the industry. So reach out to your chefs you've worked with, trained with, or respect. Invite them along to pop-ups. You know, like, sure, Michi and myself would gladly go and support young people if they ask us to come to a pop-up. And then, you know, it doesn't take much from, you know, few different Instagram accounts in Sydney to talk about something before the buzz kicks in.
Yep.
And then it comes down to quality. If you invite us to something that's pretty shit, you're probably not going to get the nicest, you know, comments.
You're probably not going to get Instagram and not.
Yeah. But even if we did, because we're friends, the next wave wouldn't, because they're not your friends. Yeah. So it's kind of like everything has a flow. And if you stop it,
You just can't expect anything to be easy, especially in the climate that we have today in the industry. Like, nothing is easy.
But be realistic, you know. That's all I'm saying.
Awesome. Well, should we put a pin in that conversation?
Yeah.
Should we pop that pop-up pop-up.
Say pin more times.
Now it's time to move on to a very exciting segment that I forgot to do with Sophia. And it is Fuck Burger of the Week. Did you listen to our Fuck Burger discussion?
I don't listen to you guys when I'm not on podcast.
That's a lie. I know you listen.
No, I did. I did see something.
This week,
I don't like Fuck Burgers.
No, no. So Fuck Burgers are.
No, you do.
No, I do don't. I get in trouble for calling them out on the internet from people that own businesses that I apparently know. Oops. So Fuck Burgers are the name that we are giving to Freak Burgers. Don't censor the fuck. It's not. It's not. You know. You like someone would say, "My freaking ears." Say my fucking ears. Call it a fuck burger because that's what it is. It's a fuck. It's a burger that fuck boys eat. And it's a big, disgusting mess.
What's a fuckboy?
Like, just not a good person. Just a bad bloke who lines up for Supreme drops. So this one is a recommendation from a listener, Billy Turnus. Or Tuanus. Sorry, Billy. I mispronounce everyone's names in here, including my own sometimes, so it's fine. We're going to bring it back to a classic Mitchin conversation, especially when Mike's around, is Perth. So it comes from Western Australia.
It's been too long.
Last drop, Belia. Is it Belia? I don't know. How would you pronounce that? Belia?
Perth sucks. I don't know. Belia. How would they say it with one chromosome?
Belia. You're going to love the email that came in today as well.
People fucking hate me. I don't mind. Yeah, yeah. That's all right.
Okay. They say, have you tried our pizza burger yet? It's a big feed loaded with char-grilled beef patty, pickles, cheese, bacon, egg, aioli in a toasted Turkish bread with melted cheese, pepperoni, and Napolitana sauce. Not for the faint-hearted. So it's a burger oversized to begin with. And then on top of the bun, they've lathered on pizza sauce, cheese, and pepperoni.
Hongi would love it.
No one would love it.
Sounds fucking horrible.
And it's just just from a healthy point of view, like burgers are already unhealthy enough. You don't need to make them so fucking ridiculous that like, and you know, the people that seek these things out don't need to eat a burger to begin with. They should probably go easy on that. And like, this is just like you are lessening their lifespan with these fuck burgers.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think any of our, like, I don't think we're speaking to people that don't agree with us.
You know
what I mean? I think we're in our little bubble of people that all think that shit's
the
disgusting.
Fuck burger bubble.
Yeah, I think this is a waste of breath. Like, everything to do with the fuck burger. Like, I think you captured it. And then if you make one, you should just go and live on an island somewhere and not talk.
I'm going to call out the more ridiculous
ones. Yeah, do it.
Because since mentioning it on the podcast 2 weeks ago.
Oh, people love calling it out.
Holy fuck. I've been tagged in, I reckon, over 100 fuck burgers. Yeah, so much that I was so lazy that instead of finding one of the really good ones, Billy tagged me in one today. And I'm like, that'll do. Because they're all fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, so, they're all fucked.
But like, I got ones that are made on buns that have been dyed different colors. Ones that have like so many different kinds of meat and cuisine crammed into it. So look forward to Fuck Burgers of the Week.
Is there any burger that's not a normal burger that's acceptable? So we're not talking about like a pizza topping with a fried chicken with with a whole roast beef, you know. Is there anything that extends past a double patty and bacon kind of vibe, or a classic cheese with a bit of slaw, or you know, something like that?
I used to do a burger that I loved called the Shaka burger, and it was like the kind of you know, the pineapple on a burger vibe, but we did it with like we would grill the pineapple and then we did it with like a habanero mayo.
Yeah, but that's
and
okay.
And lettuce.
Okay.
See, that's not,
So how many things can you add?
There's a history of pineapple on a burger.
Yeah, sure.
So how many things can you add before you become a fuck burger?
The lot.
So if I just took like a braised short rib and put that inside a bun, that's fuck burger.
Well, no. Sorry. I thought you meant you would put that on top of a burger. That's what they do.
Within the bun, it's okay?
I think the biggest thing is multiple meats. Like, yeah, it's
two
fine.
Two types of animal.
If you're putting bacon and beef together, that's fine. It's a classic combo. Mm-hmm. Chicken and bacon together, that's a classic combo. That works. But if you're doing meat, like beef and fried chicken and fucking pulled pork.
That's so about like smoked, fuck burger territory. Smoked eel and beef.
Anytime you put,
because I had that and it was really good
on a burger
in Japan.
Wow, okay,
it was right. Fucking hectic.
Yeah, okay,
it was so good.
Anytime you put something,
Japan get a pass in general.
Okay. Yeah, anytime you put something on the bun, Like anytime you fuck with the bun somehow.
So ex parte to the normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've created a new
automatically.
Roof,
yeah. If you can't hold it with your hands because there's fucking molten Napolitana sauce and cheese on top. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'm just waiting for one of those like bobblehead dolls on top of a burger. Like they're just sitting on top of it. It's like, how do I approach this?
Anyway, it'll be abusive email to my
No, it's not abusive. This is from listener Glenn. Hello, gents / cunts. My name is Glenn and I'm a chef from Ireland who decided to move about 6 years ago to make Perth my home. I have listened to your show from day one and look forward to a new podcast every week when it happens. Sorry about that, but not really. Basically, yeah. I'm writing this because of your latest podcast. The main discussion was about women in the hospitality and stereotypes and generic bullshit. Many times on the Mitchin, Perth has been looked down upon and has been the butt of many jokes by people who have never been to Perth. Well, a few weeks ago, by the way, there's not one full stop in this email.
I'm doing it look like potatoes. They get too sad.
Well, a few weeks ago, I attended a lunch from a former Mitchin guest in Amy Hamilton from Liberté, who had joined forces with a local wine bar owned and run by Rachel Nial from Budburst. It was an amazing day hosted by another former Mitchin guest in Max Veenhuizen. I'm sure I dogged your name. Sorry, mate. Anyway, the best thing I took from this long lunch was looking around the venue and noticing that the room was probably a majority of women. No big deal, I know. But when I started to see who the women in the venue were, I started to think about the Perth hospitality industry and realized right there and then that Perth has amazing women in all aspects of the industry here. In a way, these women are running this town and Perth is all the better for it. I look at women like Rachel, who has a fantastic natural wine bar serving modern French food. Emma Ferguson, the owner of No Mafia and Balthazar fame. By the way, boys, the video is still rolling. With probably the best palate in town. Sally of Shadow Wine Bar killing it. Terry Siever bringing the best natural wine possible at non-Perth prices. Caitlin from Lulu Delizia managing the front of house from one of the best restaurants in the country. The list goes on and I have not mentioned a ton of people. My point is that Perth is looked down upon a lot and in many ways and is constantly 5 years behind. But how about you guys have a look at how we have such a varied workforce and, dare I say it, a female-dominated one. I'm sure this email will be greeted with some kind of uninformed remark, but why don't you guys give Queensland abuse for once?
That's a great email. I think we should definitely touch on that. In other news, I've got a different segment we should talk about because that email was crap.
Really? You don't want to talk about it at all?
Talk about that, really? Just some dude having a whinge.
He's not whinging at all. He's whinging at you.
It's great.
He's whinging at us.
He's not whinging at anybody.
It's great.
He's saying, I know you guys like to shit on Perth, but like, you know, in direct response to what we were talking about on a previous episode.
We shit on Perth because it's fun and not because it's accurate.
He's not even saying don't shit on Perth. He's just saying, hey, it's great.
Don't shit on Perth. Give us a shout out.
It's fantastic that there's so many women in the industry and we should celebrate them 100%. But it's Perth. Whatever. No, I'm not. And to be fair, we give fucking Queensland heaps of shit too.
Yeah, come on.
Everyone
ending on that sentence. Surely you got to give the Melbourne the email. If give any email a pass that ends with "Why don't you give Queensland abuse for once?"
That's great. Like,
no, I think it's great that that Perth recognises the women in the industry and just looking around and going, man, fuck, it's so good that we're being led by all these amazing women. And that's great too. But so is Sydney and so is Melbourne and so is everywhere else. Like, it shouldn't be a big deal that there's amazing women doing amazing things in the industry.
It shouldn't be. I'm not touching on it.
Anyway, Mike has a new segment.
No, I don't even.
Thanks, Glenn, for your email. If you want to send an email for Mike, send it to me and I'll make sure he gets it.
There's no way that anything we say is based on anything but being dickheads. Like, if anyone takes anything we take seriously, like, it's the biggest piss take of all time. Like, we have no idea about food, we have no idea about hospitality, and we definitely don't have any idea about Perth. I do love that he even called himself out whilst defending Perth and was like, maybe we're 5 years behind, though. Like, that was pretty good. Like, hey, oh, we're shit. But hey, like, that was good. But we don't know anything. We don't care. We're just having a laugh. And if you're listening, you're having a laugh too.
I don't think he was offended that we're
offended.
He's not offended at all. He's listened to every episode.
Offended every single time. And it's taken him that long to write the email.
Do you remember Mike's segment name?
Was it called Mike Psyched Like Get On Your Fucking Bike?
No, it was terrible. But you know what? I looked and looked and looked and I could not find five things.
Did you look in Perth?
I did.
Hence the reason we're skipping the dishes I want to eat.
You couldn't find five things this week?
I couldn't find
week.
Five things. You know what? It was really disappointing the last 2 weeks. Couldn't find anything that was really popping. Okay, there was. So Paper Bird was great. I saw all the dishes from Paper Bird, but I ate them.
Paper
so
Bird is a new restaurant. We talked about it last week very briefly, and we will have Ned and Ben on at some point again soon.
And then,
but then you got the new one from the Moon Park Boys.
Esther's doing really cool shit at the moment. Yeah. With the chicken neck the sausage chicken, on, yeah. And LP's is doing really cool shit. LP's, but everyone, we say that cool every shit. Time yeah. I come on. Everyone,
did you see Clayton Instagram the chicken neck with the head? You should see the comments on.
Oh, they're all of them on the Esther's one. They just got slammed. People, that's gross. That's disgusting. Yeah. That's you're idiots. Stop eating food, you douchebags, and stop following a restaurant. Like we put up a photo of the baby pigs that I had for my birthday, and people were like, "That's horrible. I'm a meat eater, but that's disgusting." It's like, well, go to hell. You know, like, what are you going to do with people like that? Like, really, I like eating meat, but I don't want to see it. It's like, well, I don't want to talk to you. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not even going to engage them. You know?
I don't want to know it was alive, but I like eating it.
That's it. Anyway, I got a different one. I got a segment called What Grates My Gouda. And I gave the name just for Lebs. And everyone could play.
Like Gouda.
It's Gouda. And you love it. It was just for you.
Do you even grate Gouda?
You can.
Yeah,
it's called Gouda, but it doesn't sound as good if you say it that
it's
way.
It's definitely called Gouda.
Yeah, it's Gouda in Australia. Yeah. It is.
Really, right.
Gouda.
Gouda.
Yeah.
Say it, it's Gouda.
See, I gave you a Simpsons quote. So what grates my Gouda? So I want everyone to play along. You just have to think of something in the hospitality or food or beverage industry and what really annoys you. I'm going to kick
Isn't
my...
Isn't that what we do every fucking week?
Yeah, but this time it's in a segment, so it can be like specific, all right? So the first one I want to talk about, and this is the only one I'm going to talk about, and then you guys play along because I know you'll have your little inputs. I hate when people take techniques and infer them as flavorings. Right, so the classic example is when you get panna cotta ice cream.
Yeah, you love that.
I fucking it gets my that. Gouda and grates it.
Grates my Gouda. Grates my Gouda.
I can accept when people
You've
say
been carrying on about this
yeah,
for like
it never
5 years.
Stops annoying me.
Never said on the podcast. That's hilarious.
Never
though.
Stops annoying me. You know what I mean? It's so fucking shit. You know, like you get this ice cream and it's called panna cotta, and you're like, what the fuck is panna cotta flavor? I can accept tiramisu. That's an actual flavor. It's coffee, it's chocolate and all that. But don't tell me something's called panna cotta flavor because it's just cream. It's cream.
It's just ice cream. You've just made ice cream.
You just made ice cream. It's unflavored ice cream. All you did was take elements out of ice cream.
What if you put, I'm going to put a panna cotta on and say it's ice cream panna cotta.
At home for Archie.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. And then the other one that I'll bring up, which I really hate, is when you're reading a normal menu, right? And they're like, they'll just throw in like, oh, like slow cooked lamb, blah, blah. And then I'll write like mirepoix carrot. And it's like, why did you have to tell me it was a mirepoix of carrots? Like just a one little French terminology. They just throw away little thing. You know,
I mean? I like when you see umami on a menu.
Yeah.
Yo, that's not an ingredient.
Yeah. I added so much umami. But there's lots, huh?
Yeah.
There's plenty of things that you just see and you just like.
I love when reviewers complain about the way menus are written, no matter how the menu is written.
Yeah,
they complain when it's three ingredients.
Yep.
They complain when it's a long description. Like, what
you say?
What
this grates your Gouda, Mitch?
Fucking want?
Yeah,
what do you actually?
Yeah, you can't
you
win.
Tell me what you actually want, because
if only they had a publication
does,
where they could outline what they want to, how they want to see a menu,
how they want it done.
Gourmet Traveler, put a fucking template of a menu style you would like, and then we can all give you shit about how fucking stupid it is.
Mine's simpler. Why are cronuts still a thing?
Oh, okay.
I went to a cafe the other day and they had an all cronut menu.
Yeah, right.
Haven't we evolved beyond like? No one wants cronuts anymore.
Did either of you ever go and buy a cronut? Did you actually ever
I worked above the Paramount Coffee Project and they did cronuts there, so I had one of their cronuts.
No, I don't think I've ever bought a cronut.
I got given them, and I ate it, and I was like, meh.
I like the cruffin at
what
Loon.
The fucking hell.
They put
what's the croissant
muffin? What's a cruffin?
Yeah, a croissant muffin. So they put croissant dough into a muffin mold and bake it like that. So it's like twist it up.
Did you actually say I want the cruffin, or did you just point
no,
at the
I
thing?
If you were over in like Iceland, it'd be like a puffin.
Puffin,
in a croissant.
Crispy, crispy puffin.
Wrapped in.
So it'd be like Morgie when he goes over to do Copenhagen Bells. They'll be doing cruffins.
Nashville style cruffins. That's our episode for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Mike, and be sure to look out for, we didn't even say what the fucking place you're opening is going to be called, because I wanted to give you shit about that.
That's a good one.
So it's opening in an old liquor shop called Mr. Liquor.
Yep.
And so they're calling it Mr. Liquor's Dirty Italian Disco. So the vibe is, whatever, I don't know what will come through, but there's going to be like karaoke's and like mirror balls and shit. So it should be pretty,
it's going to be karaoke's.
Very much.
Is that a pluralized thing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're my multiples. Like, because it's a drunken room and people just singing. I don't know what they are. Yeah.
Look out for that. I can't wait to eat there. It's really exciting. Thanks so much for coming in again.
Yep.
And you can find Mike online at Pinbone is the best place to look for him on Instagram.
Pinbone.
See the work in progress shots. Mostly you're going to see a bunch of, like, a few weeks of you just getting drunk on that account the next couple of weeks, right?
I'm going to carve a heap of spoons and stuff because I haven't been able to do anything that I've wanted to do for ages. So you'll probably see
Mike wants to do.
No, I've basically got a collection of like wood that I've been dying to fucking carve and stuff like that. That's what I do in my spare time most of the time, and I've been dying to get into it. So you'll probably see a whole lot of spoon. I'm doing a lot for Igni and for Attica. So
sick.
Yeah, so you'll probably see some of that.
Unreal. You can find Mitch online at Instakrill on Instagram, at Krillin on the Run on Twitter. I'm at Levdog, LEVDAWG. Check out my other podcasts, Hey Fam and Serious Issues, and make sure you check out Acme. And Rosé as well.
Do I still get to pick a song?
Yeah, sure. I forgot to put it on Sophia's one. I just realized. So I've got to.
You got to add.
I've got to go back and edit it. So re-download the Sophia episode if you want to hear her song at the end of it.
Well, I've got one.
What is it?
The current climate of the fucked up world, and also, sorry, Perth, you're all right. But anyway,
this week, man.
The current climate of all the fucked up things that are going on. I want the Gap Band. You dropped a bomb on me. All right, it's a weird funk song.
That's a good song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah.
Gap Band, you dropped a bomb on me. Play it now.
Mike Funk Classic Eggert.
That's us.
Again.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing that, singing at karaoke at the new joint.
Thanks so much for listening. Find us online, facebook.com/themitchin, or send us an email, themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. We'll make sure Mike is on to abuse you for it. Thanks so much. See you next time.
Bye, Perth.
Bye.
You took the bomb on me. You took the Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.